do you walk into a new space? Let's say today was your very first day in this space. You don't know much about Unitarian Universalism, and you've decided that today is the day that you will do as you have been thinking about for a while and visit a new church. Maybe like me, you liked your old faith, but wanted something more. Maybe, like many of you, you didn't have a church ever, or at least not as an adult. Maybe you rejected your old faith as a matter of principle. Maybe, like me, your friends kept telling me 20 plus years ago, you're a UU and you don't know it. A dear friend said that to me and urged me to check out some local UU congregations. Finally, I did. So how do you walk in? Do you pretend that you've got the lay of the land and walk in with so much confidence no greeter dare says hello? They figure they knew you already or should have, and so they let you pass without a greeting. Or do you sit in your car and wait till the service has begun? You know, you could actually see through the windows. And then you race in as they're singing the first hymn. So you go unnoticed. Do you sit in the last row? In the first church UU congregation that I went to, there was a balcony. I knew nothing about this church, but I found myself up in the balcony. And no one noticed me that day or for many days to come. Again, I ask you, how do you go into the space? Do you look to see if people look like you? Do they dress like you? Did you check out the cars in the lot to see if they look like the car you might drive? Did you, in short, assume that you would be welcomed only if you were like the people who are here already? That if there was any misfit, you would be the one who had to change. Maybe. I know that it did not occur to me that people in what came to be my first UU congregation would welcome me as I was, would accept that I was about 40, trying to have a child as a single mom, that I was formerly a Quaker, a pacifist, and actually still pretty much of a Quaker, even though I was stepping through that UU Cong door. I just wanted worship to include singing, and I wanted my congregation to welcome the baby that I was dreaming of. How do we welcome visitors? What are our words? I'm new here. And that's really great because I have not heard of disastrous welcomes at Sterling. But believe me, my minister friends can fill the whole night's conversation with stories of greeters saying things like, oh, you must be looking for the Baptist church down the road because I see you've got a cross on as somebody walks in the door. Ouch! Or saying something about a child who is quietly or maybe not so quietly going in the back of the room. And then the family doesn't actually feel very welcomed. So I figure having not heard about these problems here, this is the perfect time for me to talk openly about welcome. By the way, after service, or actually I see they may have been out already, there are some handouts that are available with some handy welcoming tips. So the word welcome is a really good start. It's kind of nice, it's open-ended, it doesn't actually require a specific answer from somebody. Seeing someone, saying hello, knowing that they may have been here before, but they may be brand new, give them your name. You might mention we have a potluck here about once a month, and that's a great way to get to know folks. I'll be here this coming Friday. Anyway, you got the idea, and you got this. You got it. So now, here they are. Do we expect them to change, or are we willing to make change for this to be a sacred space for all? Can we assume that this sacred space is big enough spiritually that those of many beliefs, all holding tight to our principles, are welcome? That this sacred space can be holy for all? We do a good job of welcoming folks. I see our greeters and they are warm. We have coffee and those yummy treats divided by last name. People bring treats each week. That's great. What a great shared ministry of food. Yes, that is welcoming. And we have a lot of things going on. We have potluck dinners, family friendly and actually friendly, for all pretty much every month. Yay! We have covenant groups and book groups and more. The Pastoral Care Committee reaches out to those with health or other issues unlike any place I've ever been. That is a ministry of welcome, and it is extraordinary. People have each other, invite each other to their homes at the auction. Yeah, the upcoming auction, this is kind of a pitch. And people are going to have meals together and social gatherings, which allow new friends and old friends to get together for true communion and collegiality. In lots of ways, there are so many things that are going right. And yet every church needs to ask itself, are we offering the radical hospitality we aspire to? So I want to take you back to that congregation I visited over 20 years ago, what became my first UU congregation, a congregation I still love. I was there for 2 or 3 years till my then partner, I started dating a UU guy, wanted to go to his UU church so much we switched. But I always wondered who at that old church is actually doing great stuff that I never heard about. Was there more stuff going on than I knew? What old, long-standing friendships out there were there that I'm not being invited into? Am I really welcomed at that book club that they had back there? Am I actually going to be included if I show up for choir with my not great voice? How deep is my welcome? In that first church, honestly, I came to conclude it was not as deep as I hoped. When I stopped going, no one called to ask why or invite me back. Maybe that's a lot to ask, but it kind of left me wondering. So I ask again, how deep is our welcoming of visitors? Do we turn away from our dear friends at coffee, as hard as that is to include a visitor in the conversation? Do we wear name tags? I am loving looking out there and seeing all the name tags. But believe me, I'm new. It helps. Do we call or email the person who we met at church several times but haven't seen recently just to check in and see how they're doing? I'm asking. I don't have the answers to these questions. They are really just that. They are questions. Each of you has to answer them. They are honest questions, questions that come up for me now at every church I visit. They come up because even with good, loving, devoted members, the answer is not always yes to even one or two of these questions. So I'm asking, and you'll need to think your own answers to those questions. The other area of welcome that is on my mind right now is the welcome we give or don't give to differently abled visitors, or even a minister. How do we tell visitors that our space can accommodate a wheelchair? How do we tell them that while our sanctuary and RE space can accommodate a wheelchair, actually you can't get into our mezzanine with a wheelchair? Do you make it easy for those with disabilities to attend and participate in worship, coffee hour, social events, social action, etc.? I know that in our next building, when that time comes, the answer will be a happier one. But what can be done now to extend a hand to those who need it? What about those with different disabilities, blindness, deafness, autism, developmental delays. What about them? One of the ministers that I admire the most is the Reverend Teresa Inez Soto. They, that is their preferred pronoun, were born with cerebral palsy. Reverend Teresa used to be a lawyer. She is of Hispanic origin, and she uses a scooter. Eventually, they came out to be a poet, and now they write beautiful poetry and other liturgical materials. Here is one of the things that Reverend Teresa wrote. The thing about possibilities is that they are asking for yes, and they ask you to detach from what can be known with certainty. So here we are, awkward and not at all certain in the face, the hands, the feet, the body of untrammeled future. And we could, in contravention of the birth of any, everything, do what we have always done, except that you have prepared your courage for this moment, whether new and smooth or creased and mended, unfurl it. Let it gleam incontrovertible at evil and dishonesty and indifference. The time is now. The answer is you. Reverend Teresa both speaks with incredible honesty and love as she calls us into right relations with those with differing abilities. When I first started getting really involved in Unitarian Universalism, I fell in love with the slogan for the social justice wing of our denomination, the slogan which was standing on the side of love. That was our justice slogan not too long ago. As many do, I developed an elevator speech. For those of you who don't know, an elevator speech is a way to explain our faith in about the time it takes to go from ground one in a building to ground three or four in an elevator. And I wanted to express what Unitarian Universalism was to me and why I loved it. At the time, my elevator speech was something like this. Figuring out who to be in the world, what you want to do with your one precious life, is hard for all of us. Unitarian Universalism has given me guidance on that. When in doubt, do the loving thing, stand on the side of love. If I am trying to figure out whether to act for a cause I believe in or hang out at home, stand on the side of love. Help me to focus my energy on the right choice for me. If I wonder what I believe, focusing on the most loving response to a situation is a good place to start in figuring out where I stand. I don't know if you noticed how many times I used the word stand in that little elevator speech. So we had a hymn, we had shirts, we had a placard, we had bumper stickers that helped me focus on what I thought at the time was a wonderful guiding principle. The phrase was coined by then president of the Unitarian Universalist Association. So that's the association to which our congregations join. So we don't really have like a national membership of people. It's congregations that join together. And for us, that's the Unitarian Universalist Association. The phrase was spoken by William Sinkford in 2004 in the context of our denomination's support for same-gender marriage. Then Reverend Jason Shelton, an extraordinary composer who's written many of the hymns in our various hymnals, wrote the hymn of the same title, which quickly became my favorite. But by about 2014, Reverend Jason had heard that people with disabilities felt excluded by the words. In fact, after some time, the song had been unofficially banned at our General Assembly, the time once a year when we get together as people of faith. At General Assembly in 2016, Reverend Teresa, the same Reverend Teresa about whom I've been speaking, spelled out for the denomination how ableist language made her feel. Let me talk to you about the poignant moment in time she was. She had gone through, as all of us do in the ministerial path, multiple years of seminary. She'd gotten a master's, they had gotten a master's. They'd done their clinical pastoral education. They'd done internship. They were absolutely ready to walk in front of our denomination and be acknowledged as a minister. And they did a pretty courageous thing. They carried a sign that said, "Ouch," the whole way, going up to the sanctuary front. So this theme of the minister's part of General Assembly that year, which was woven through spiritual practice, sermon, hymns, everything, was, "Guide my feet while I run this race." I was there at that minister's worship, and I recall seeing a few friends leave during the hymn or the prayer or the worship. They left on their scooters. Others sat there with their cane or their walker, or even on their scooter, crying. At the Sunday service following that minister's worship, Reverend Teresa, who was being recognized as a newly fellowship member, sat at the front of the stage on their scooter, holding up a sign that said, "Ouch," at every standing or walking metaphor. Disabled people are 10% of any group, and when you get older people, it's probably going to be higher. Why don't we address our materials and resources to include them? Okay, let's pray on this. Father above, Lord on high, answer our prayers and heal as we seek to welcome all the people. Our need of your paternal guidance and fatherly energy, no, I can't even say it. Stop. We don't pray that way. We don't. And I bet some of you were shocked, maybe angry, maybe hurt, hearing me talk about God exclusively in a father frame of mind. Some might say, stand on the side of love, run this race, God is father. It's all a metaphor. Of course, God isn't a man, but I bet many of us recoil at terms like the ones I used in this prayer just now, when they are exclusively, repetitiously, and when they bring up old discomfort or pain. So let us talk about metaphor. When I brought up the problem of using the word standing to indicate support, or hearing to indicate understanding, or vision to indicate development of a forward-looking plan, someone usually says, "Those are just metaphors." Someone in their look, if not their words, says, "Lighten up, Reverend Alexa. Don't you know a good metaphor when you hear one?" There are those who feel the pain of an exclusively male image of the divine as painful. A disempowering and ugly metaphor. So can we offer the same grace for inclusion on ableist language? Ouch. As Reverend Teresa says, I'm not going to call "I was blind, but now I see" a spiritual statement. And I'm not going to call it a metaphor. Sure, many people whose vision is different won't mind the reference. I've talked with some of them in this congregation. But surely some don't like being called out as less than, or having the characteristics of the starting point for a profound visual, for a profound spiritual journey. Reverend Teresa says that it isn't the words that hurt, but the thoughtlessness reinforced when the elevator doesn't work, or when you have to enter through the back door and around the kitchen, or preach from the floor when everyone else is on the chancel. It's not that we can never sing a hymn or an anthem with embodied metaphors. "Guide my feet, one more step, do you hear?" But when we do it, let's say something like, "Hey, We're going to sing about feet right now. Just remember, walking is not our only spiritual expression. We have all kinds. That takes seconds, and it makes space for welcome for all. This stole says siding with love. So today we are going to do two radical things because we're Unitarian Universalists, and that's what we do. First, I've been given permission by the unanimous vote of the board to give away the Standing on the Side of Love shirts that were in my office when I got there. I want to reinforce they were bought with the best of intentions. They were bought as a positive social message, really one of the most important messages of our denomination. But we've outgrown them. The ableist message is no longer our message. Our message is now to side with love. So I'm putting this shirt and the others that were in my office in a bag, and I'm taking them to Goodwill for a charitable donation. Second, we are going to mark in the hymnal the new words of the hymn answering the call of love. So I hope you have pencils. We handed them out. We can do some more handing out if that's what it needs. Please turn to 10:14, and an act, a sacred act of moving forward and claiming what we are outgrowing, what our denomination doesn't want to be stuck at. So 10:14 actually is on two spread pages. The first spread page doesn't have the chorus at all, but I'd appreciate it if you would write answering the call of love up there in the title. And then the second spread page has four places where you're going to write that in. So you can't really see what this looks like, but this is the second spread page, and you're going to see you write it once there and then three times there. And now I will offer a prayer. Spirit of light and love, answer our prayers. Grow us into the people and denomination that we can be. Help us welcome all the people. The light of your presence in this our beloved sanctuary points us to grow, adapt, and welcome beyond our wildest dreams of just a few years ago. Nature, guide us and bless us, ancestors, father and mother. Amen. Ashe, and blessed be. And now we are going to sing Answering the Call of Love with these beautiful new words, now permanently in our hymnals. Let us sing in the most full-throated and loving way that we can.